A Very Magical Kidnapping by Diastar, read by X-Manhater. Summary, in which the quite sparkly but not very dread Wizard Adam kidnaps the noble Prince Chris, who takes it sort of personally. "It's really nothing personal," the guy explains to Chris, looking kind of apologetic. "I have nothing against you. I'm sure you're a lovely couple, you and Princess What's-Her-Name." "You kidnapped me for my wedding," Chris yells. "I'm sorry, I really can't help taking that personally. And how did you even do that? 1 minute I'm at the altar and now I'm in... Oh my god, is this your bedroom?" The man looks shifty, glancing at Chris out of the corner of his eyes, which... Is that eyeliner? Chris thinks. Who is this guy? And why is he so... sparkly? "I may have possibly miscalculated slightly when I cast the spell that transported us here. We were supposed to end up in my workroom, but..." "Wait a minute," Chris interrupts. "The spell? You're a wizard?" "Yeah," the guy, well, apparently the wizard, says, rolling his eyes. "Instantaneous transport kind of implies magic, unless you've got some special princely powers I should know about." Chris feels that insulting the man you've just kidnapped from his wedding is really just going one step too far. "Well, forgive me for not recognizing you, your wizardliness," he says sarcastically. "You don't exactly look like any of the other wizards I've met. They don't usually have nails that shiny or hair that... blue." Except then Chris feels bad, because the wizard stiffens and asks, "Is that a problem?" in this angry way that doesn't do a very good job of hiding his defensiveness. "No," Chris says honestly. "It's just different. I think you look... cool. I like the, gloves. They're very... black." "Oh, thanks." The wizard holds his hand out for Chris to take. "I'm Adam, by the way." "I'm Prince Chris of Western Arkansas," Chris says, then blushes, feeling stupid. "I guess you already knew that, huh?" "Yeah," Adam says, shrugging. "Kind of hard to kidnap someone whose name you don't know." Chris is embarrassed to realize that, for a minute, he'd actually kind of forgotten about the whole kidnapping thing. "Why did you kidnap me on my wedding day? Are you," Chris gulps, "an evil wizard?" He's heard of evil wizards running rampant in other kingdoms, but the wizards in Western Arkansas are not only not evil, they're also pretty boring. Too boring to be evil even if they tried, Chris figures. He doesn't know Adam very well, but Chris thinks that nobody wearing that much glitter could ever be boring. "I'm not evil," Adam looks offended. "Just broke," he admits, looking sheepish. "I'm on contract for the King of Missouri. Looking this fabulous isn't cheap," he insists defensively. "I can't believe you kidnapped me for money," Chris exclaims. Adam raises an eyebrow. "You liked it better when you thought I had abducted you for my own nefarious purposes?" Chris glares. "When you marry Princess Katie, your marriage unites Eastern and Western Arkansas into one kingdom. I guess His Majesty thought that would make Arkansas too big a threat," Adam explains. "Either way, it's no skin off my nose. I kidnap you, keep you here until the treaty falls apart, then plop you back in your lovely home. I get my paycheck, I go on an awesome shopping spree, and move out of this kind of sketchy tower. And everybody's happy. Sounds good to me." "Tower?" Chris says, looking around at the slightly shabby bedroom he's standing in, with its saggy ceiling and weirdly angled corners. "This is your wizard's tower?" "I thought wizard's towers were supposed to be... magnificent and imposing and spacious and, architecturally sound," Chris finishes, looking askance at the way the door behind Adam isn't even really close to level on top. Adam scowls. "Do I come into your kingdom and make snide remarks about how I think the crops are a little moldy and the tax system isn't geographically equitable? No, but that's because I have manners. I don't walk into other people's homes and bitch about them." "I didn't walk in. You kidnapped me." Chris thinks it's a little troubling how they keep losing sight of that fact. Adam waves a hand dismissively. "Details. Anyway, as you so kindly pointed out, the tower's not very impressive or big, so you're staying in here with me until the King of Missouri says you're kosher to go. I have a bathroom and a kitchen and a dining room and a workroom, but this is the only place to sleep, really, so home sweet home, I guess." Chris stares at him. "I'm staying in your bed?" Adam looks around his room like he's seeing it for the first time, then jumps and flushes a little. No, sorry, forgot about the whole one bed thing, hang on." He opens his mouth and notes begin pouring out. As Chris watches, the single bed starts to grow and stretch until finally there's a popping sound, and it separates into two very respectable beds, complete with their own pillows and blankets. Chris gives Adam an admiring look. That was cool. You didn't even have a spell or anything. You just sang and it happened. Adam shrugs. That's how it's always been for me. I guess I'm lucky that way. That's really impressive, Chris insists. I've never seen a wizard do that. It's supposed to be really hard, isn't it? I mean, you must be super talented. Adam just shrugs again. It hasn't done me much good. Like I said, broke. It's obvious he doesn't want to talk about it, so Chris leaves it alone. It's probably a little weird to be such a nice guy that you end up trying to respect your kidnapper's emotional issues, but Chris is used to being weird that way. Being a prisoner of the wizard Adam turns out to not be as bad as Chris thought it would be. He was pretty ticked off to find that Adam hadn't thought to get Chris any, you know, clothes or toothbrushes or books to read or soap, but the incident teaches Chris something very valuable. Adam totally can't resist Chris's sad puppy eyes. Adam ends up jumping back into the castle 3 times until Chris is satisfied that he has all the stuff that he'll need to keep himself occupied during his captivity. Chris felt a little weird asking Adam to grab his guitar on the last trip. Even though Adam is a total mercenary jerk who kidnapped him from his own wedding, it's still embarrassingly like waving a crayon drawing in front of the court painter and saying, "See, I'm an artist too." Fortunately, Adam doesn't say anything, and it's not that strange anyway for a normal person to have a musical instrument. Lots of people have musical hobbies. It doesn't have to mean anything. So being a prisoner isn't so bad, but it is definitely boring. Sometimes he and Adam talk, which is surprisingly nice and interesting, but Adam spends most of the day holed up in his workroom, which Chris isn't allowed into, and the tower is as small as Chris predicted. Only 4 rooms, which doesn't allow for a lot of changes in scenery. It makes Chris curious. Here's Adam, this amazingly talented wizard who should have had an amazingly gorgeous tower with a zillion rooms full of nooks and crannies, and exotic delicacies to eat and a mob of servants and silk sheets, and wonders around every corner. Instead, Adam lives in this ramshackle tower with a roommate who he had to kidnap for money and has to do his own laundry and dishes and comes to bed tired every night, with his throat raw from singing his spells all day. "Do you, want me to do the laundry or something?" Chris finally offers. Adam might be a sketchy kidnapping wizard, but it goes against Chris's nature to watch somebody else suffer when there's something he can do. Adam raises an eyebrow. "You know there's no laundry room, right?" Chris thinks. "Oh, then how?" "I do the chores with magic," Adam admits. "It's faster and takes less space. So thanks for the offer, but there's not much you can do. And also, why are you offering to do my chores? You remember that I'm totally keeping you prisoner here, right?" Chris squirms and says, You seem really tired all the time, and I felt bad for you, okay?" "Oh my god, how are you even real?" Adam asks, staring at Chris like he's the weird one in this room. Chris blushes. "Some people are just nice," he mutters. "I can't help it." Adam stares for a couple more minutes, then says, "Come with me." Adam leads Chris through the kitchen and through the badly sanded door into his workroom, which Chris has never seen before. This is more like it, Chris thinks. It's a beautiful room, every wall crammed with shelves, every shelf crammed with books and paper, musical instruments, bottles and jars. There's even a piano. "Do you play? The piano, I mean?" Chris asks, which is probably a dumb question, but Adam just says absently, "Not really. I keep trying to teach myself and then getting distracted." "I could, teach you," Chris offers hesitantly. That gets Adam's attention. He whirls around to look at Chris again. "Seriously," he says, staring intently into Chris's eyes. "I mean, seriously, where did you come from?" Chris wants to say Arkansas, but he's pretty sure that Adam knows that, so he decides not to say anything. Adam's clearly looking for something. When he finds it, he holds it up triumphantly. "Aha!" he exclaims, holding the object out to Chris. It's a beautiful pewter bowl with all kinds of shapes of plants and animals twining around the rim. Adam pours water into the bowl until it's half full, then sets it on the work table. "I thought you might want to see how things are going at home," he suggests. "It's not an easy spell, but..." Adam looks away and mumbles. "I'm not a total jerk. Not usually, anyway." "I'd really like that," Chris says quietly. He knows his family must be worried. Princess Katie, too. They've known each other practically forever. It was a political marriage, sure, but he'd actually been looking forward to the day when she would be his wife. She's beautiful and smart and strong, and Chris knows how lucky he is. Or how lucky he was, anyway. He doesn't know if they'll still be able to be married after all of this kidnapping stuff is resolved. Adam starts to sing his spell, peering closely at the spellbook. When he reaches out to scoop something into his hand from a glass jar, Chris can't help blurting out, "Is that really glitter?" Even though he knows he's not supposed to interrupt a spell in progress. Adam loses the thread of the spell by laughing, and he glares at Chris, who shrugs apologetically. When Adam finishes the spell, an image starts to form in the water. Adam motions for Chris to come over and look. "There will be sound in a second," he says. "It should start kicking in any second." "Thank you," Chris says softly. Chris looks down into the bowl and sees Katie sitting on her throne, looking worried. He feels a clench of guilt. "I just want to know that Prince Chris is all right," she insists, talking to someone out of view.
"I regret to inform your highness that I cannot guarantee that. In fact, I have to tell you that we have reason to believe that your fiancé is in grave, grave danger," a voice replies.
The view in the bowl expands to reveal a man that Chris doesn't recognize, but when Adam sees the guy, he flinches and whispers, "Bastard." "Who is that guy?" Chris asks as his parents step up to join Katie, looking just as worried as she does.
"The wizard Danny," Adam says grimly. "I don't know why he's there, but I don't like it."
The wizard Danny, apparently, continues to talk to Katie wearing a sad expression that seems kind of fake.
"As you requested, princess, the Council of Wizards used our arcane powers to find the prince, and I'm afraid the news is bad. He has been abducted by the dread wizard Adam," he says, in that way that makes it clear he's using a capital D on dread.
Chris turns to look at Adam. Adam is kind of strange for a wizard, Chris has to admit that. But he does his own laundry, even if it is with magic. And he went back to fetch Chris's guitar, and he works really hard, and he's doing this nice thing for Chris. And the poor guy obviously has serious money troubles, and also seems kind of oblivious to basic architectural principles. He doesn't seem dread to Chris.
"Are you seriously dread?" Chris whispers, meaning to make a joke out of it, but Adam just looks suddenly old and stares down into the bowl of water.
Katie looks kind of suspicious.
"I've never heard of this dread wizard Adam. Where did he come from, and why do you think he kidnapped Prince Chris? Supposedly," she adds, giving Danny kind of a dubious look.
The wizard Danny puts on his fake sad face again. Chris thinks that Katie's not any more fooled by it than he is.
"The Council of Wizards had no choice but to accept Adam into our ranks because his talent is formidable, but no wizard was willing to take him on as an apprentice, and so his magic is crude. And he lives in obscurity and resents the council and plots revenge against us. Of course, we wish that he would see the error of his ways and rejoin us, but this kidnapping just demonstrates how far he's fallen, to abduct a noble prince just to gratify his own perverse desires."
Danny stops suddenly and holds a hand up to his mouth. "Oh no, I've said too much," he exclaims, and it's so fake that Chris wants to throw up. Katie doesn't seem to like it much either. She narrows her eyes at the wizard Danny.
"I don't like you, wizard," she says. "I think you have a lying tongue."
Danny sputters. Katie ignores it and goes on.
"I know my rights. I'm calling a wizard convocation. There are rules about how you guys can treat us non-magical folks, and I'm going to see that they're followed. And I'm going to do it without your help," she concludes, turning away from the wizard.
Chris smiles as the image in the bowl fades out and says, "That's my girl," with a kind of quiet pride. He turns to see Adam, to have a laugh about that skis bucket Danny and how Katie put him in his place, but the laugh dies when he sees how Adam is looking at the floor, arms crossed defensively. It just doesn't make any sense. It looks like he's expecting Chris to hit him or something, which would be crazy after Adam just did this nice thing, showing him his home and family.
"Are you okay?" Chris asks.
Adam doesn't say anything for a minute, then looks up at Chris and back down at the floor quickly.
"You can have the bedroom. Sorry, I'll move one of the beds in here."
"Where?" Chris blurts out, because he honestly can't imagine how Adam thinks he's going to fit a cot in between all these cluttered tables, let alone an actual bed, considering that a person can hardly walk a straight line from one end of the room to another without bumping into a table or a cabinet.
"Wait, is this about what that creepy Danny wizard said? Because even I could tell he's a liar."
"He was telling the truth," Adam says quietly, still not looking at Chris. That makes no sense whatsoever, and Chris looks askance at Adam, who's behaving really strangely all of a sudden.
If your secret, perverse desire is to have somebody in your tower playing guitar badly at all hours of the day or night and insulting your architecture, then yeah, I guess he was, although then I feel kind of sad for you, because that's a pretty lame secret desire.
But otherwise, I don't know what you're talking about.
That gets Adam to look at him. You play guitar beautifully, he protests.
Also, that's not what I meant. I mean, Danny's right. I'm gay.
He doesn't hesitate when he says it, and he holds his head up proudly, but holds himself like he expects to have to take a punch. Chris just doesn't get it. This whole conversation, it's like Adam is talking a whole different language to some other person in some other time zone or something Chris doesn't know.
I kind of figured, Chris says, still confused. I mean, I hate to stereotype, but the hair was kind of... No offense. It's very cool. You know I like your hair. I'm pretty sure we've talked about it, like, several times. Which was kind of another giveaway, the talking about hair thing. Sorry.
Adam stares at Chris for a minute. Then another minute. And another.
Seriously, he says finally. Where did they find you?
He breaks into a grin, a real one, and adds, And I know you wanted to say Arkansas last time, but that's totally not allowed. I'm speaking more metaphorically.
You can read my mind? Chris asks, eyes wide, staring at Adam.
Adam laughs.
Oh, so that freaks you out. Good to know. But no, I can't read your mind. Sorry, you're just really transparent. Everything you think is right there on your face.
Chris blushes and mumbles, Whatever.
That night, as they're getting ready for bed, Adam asks, This is really all okay with you?
Chris gives him a look.
You kidnapped me. You are holding me here against my will. I keep feeling like that fact isn't getting the attention it deserves.
Adam rolls his eyes.
You're fixating obsessively on that one tiny little thing. That's got to be unhealthy. Anyway, you know that's not what I meant.
Chris slips under the covers and looks up at the ceiling.
I really don't care about that stuff. It shouldn't matter. It doesn't matter to me. I like you the way you are. If you liked girls or didn't wear leather or didn't sparkle, you wouldn't be the Wizard Adam.
And would that be bad? Adam sounds amused.
Well, on the plus side, I wouldn't have been kidnapped for my own wedding.
You've really got to learn to let that go.
But otherwise, yeah, Chris says softly.
That would be bad. I think if we met some other way, we'd be friends. Don't you think?
Adam turns out the light and falls into his own bed.
Maybe, yeah.
Chris lies awake for a while. He can tell from Adam's breathing that Adam's not asleep either.
That's why the tower is so sketchy, Adam whispers out of the blue.
Most wizards, when they build their towers, they have the whole council helping them and they take shifts and work for days and pour all of their power into it. But the council doesn't like me. They say I'm bad for their image. They don't want people to think that if their kids grow up to be wizards, they'll be like me. So none of them would take me as an apprentice, and I'm forbidden to have any apprentices of my own. And I had to build the tower by myself. So that's why.
That sucks, Chris whispers back. Thanks for showing me my family.
I should have been doing that from the beginning. I can do it every day, from now on, if you want.
That would be great, Chris replies, then drifts off to sleep. In the morning, Adam asks awkwardly if there's anything else he can do for Chris to make his stay more pleasant. Chris thinks that sounds like a hotel brochure and says so, but finally admits, It really would make me feel better if I could do some chores.
Adam laughs and throws his hands up.
Fine, fine, you weirdo. You can hash it out with Allison.
Who's Allison?
Allison, it turns out, is a fire spirit. She's my familiar, Adam explains, as if it's no big deal, but Chris knows that most wizards just have animals for their familiars. Adam must have a ton of magic to be able to sustain a fire spirit on his own.
Is this Prince Chris? She exclaims, when Adam sings her out of the fireplace in his workroom. I've heard so much about you. You're just as cute as Adam said you were.
Oh my God, Allison, shut up, Adam mutters, but Chris just laughs and says,
Thanks, it's good to finally meet you, too.
Adam shoos them out into the kitchen to talk alone. When he closes the door to his workroom behind him, Allison turns to Chris with a soft look in her eyes.
I'm glad you're here. He's been pretty lonely. He leaves the tower when he can, and I try to keep him company, but it's still good for him to have someone around who he can really talk to.
As happy as I am to cheer up the great wizard Adam, Chris says, I think there's probably a better way for him to find friends than to run around kidnapping princes on their wedding days.
That was very rude, Allison agrees, nodding solemnly, but there's a twinkle in her eyes.
Allison very politely but firmly refuses to let Chris do any of the chores, because most of them have to be done magically anyway, and the others would take Chris 10 times as long as they take her, and she just won't stand for that.
Chris gracefully accepts defeat.
Is there anything I can do? I get kind of bored, and Adam seems kind of stressed, says Chris.
You could help him cast, Allison says, which knocks Chris for a loop.
I'm not a wizard, he stammers, which stupidly still hurts a little to say, even after all these years.
I know that, silly, Allison explains, rolling her eyes. But somebody's playing the guitar out here while Adam's working, and unless there's another spirit around, I'm betting that's you. If you play for Adam while he sings, you can offer up some of your own strength by blending your talents together. If you want to help, that's how I'd do it.
That would be great, Chris says, honestly. Princes are allowed to have hobbies, and music isn't too weird as far as that goes, but it's always bothered Chris a little to know that he'll never actually get to perform, that the only thing his talent is good for is wasting his own time. The idea that he might have a purpose for it, that he might really get to help somebody, is pretty awesome. So he goes and gets his guitar from the bedroom and knocks hesitantly on the workroom door. A couple seconds later, it opens, and Adam leans casually out of the door.
What's up?
Allison said if I wanted to help, I could play along with you, Chris says, holding up his guitar. She, wouldn't let me do any of the chores.
Adam laughs. I told you so.
But if you wouldn't mind, Adam says, opening the door wider and motioning for Chris to come in. I really would appreciate your help. I've heard you play. You're amazing.
It's just a hobby, Chris mutters, blushing.
You're too modest, Adam remarks, giving Chris a dubious look. It's unnatural.
I guess I'm just special, Chris says with a smile, and Adam rolls his eyes.
I'm strengthening the tower's magical defenses today, he says. It's hard and boring work, and I'm really bad at it, so sorry, but I could really use the help.
It's no problem, really, Chris assures him.
Don't try to think about the magic, Adam tells him. All that'll do is stress you out. Just back me up. I'll start singing the spell, and you can join in with your guitar when you feel like you have a handle on it.
Chris nods. This is just about the coolest thing he could imagine, honestly. The next best thing to being a wizard himself. He's a little nervous, but when Adam's voice starts to sing, clear and strong, it only takes Chris a couple of seconds to feel the shape of the song that Adam is singing, and to join in with his guitar.
Adam looks a little surprised at how quickly Chris joined him, but they're in perfect sync, and Chris can see when Adam's focus leaves his body, and his voice pulses with magic.
It's strange, actually. Chris can see really clearly what Adam is doing. Well, not see, per se, and not hear, either. It's some other sense, something Chris can't really describe, and Chris thinks that it's not actually normal for him to be aware of the power that Adam is directing toward the tower's walls. To feel the web of spellwork strengthening, growing brighter or louder, or something. Chris can see how Adam is struggling. His power doesn't flow smoothly. It wants to come out in flashes and bangs and bursts. Wants to explode or sparkle. Which makes perfect sense to Chris. It's Adam. But it's hard for Chris to watch Adam struggling with it, trying to build something slowly and methodically, when his talent so clearly isn't meant for that. It isn't suited for it, and it would just be so easy. And before Chris can think about it or stop himself, his mouth opens and the notes come out, just the right notes to form a bridge between Adam and the tower's defenses, to take Adam's explosive, unpredictable power and channel it into the system, turn it into something dependable and long-lasting. It's beautiful, it's right and easy. The spell's work is done, and Adam shuts it down, closing his mouth and turning to stare at Chris, who blushes furiously and looks at the floor. Moron, he thinks, utterly embarrassed. Now he won't want you to play for him anymore, and you'll be stuck plunking out chords in the bedroom again.
That was, Adam begins, and Chris cringes.
Amazing, Adam concludes, and when Chris looks up at him, he's beaming. You have so much talent. That spell usually takes me all day. I didn't know you trained to be a wizard.
I didn't, Chris stammers. I'm so sorry. I don't know where that came from. It won't happen again.
Adam frowns. You didn't train to be a wizard?
No, Chris admits. It's hard for him to go on. He's never told anyone this, but Adam deserves an explanation. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a wizard so bad, more than anything. I loved music, loved to sing. I was good at it, but I was stupid. When I was 16, my parents sat me down and reminded me that I'm a prince, I have responsibilities, people depending on me, and being a wizard isn't part of that. So I stopped singing. I grew up, Chris finishes softly.
That's stupid, Adam announces, and Chris gives him an annoyed look. I'm pretty sure I already said that, he says, but Adam shakes his head and explains. No, that's not what I mean. I mean, it's stupid you gave up. You have a ton of talent. I could tell, with a defensive spell, that you knew exactly what needed doing and how to do it. That's the kind of instinct that can't be taught. You're really good. As good as me, maybe, when you get the right training. Even if I thought you were right, and I think you're crazy, by the way, that doesn't change anything, Chris says firmly. I still have responsibilities. I always will. I have a fiancé and a kingdom. Adam rolls his eyes. Whatever. I still think you're being stupid, but whatever. I'll go, Chris says quickly, picking up his guitar, but Adam exclaims, No, I mean, he coughs. I'd really like it if you'd stay and play with me. His eyes widen and he gives Chris a panicked look. For me, he starts babbling, but Chris just laughs and says, I know what you meant. He sits back down on the stool and settles his guitar on his knee. So what are you working on now? He asks. Adam hauls out a big, heavy tray of charcoal briquettes from under the piano and sets it on the table with a groan. I thought I might sing some power into these, for Allison. You know she eats magic, right? And I can just force-feed her pure power, but these things are like candy for fire spirits, and I just... He flushes, looking defensive. I know the council says that spirits aren't people, really, and don't have feelings or opinions, but it just seems to me... Hey, Chris says, holding his hands up and speaking in what he hopes is a soothing tone of voice. No problem. I'm sure she'll be excited. I'll join in as soon as I can. Thanks, Adam says. And feel free to help me out a little more directly if you want. I'd like that. Yeah, okay, Chris says, humoring him, because there's no way he's going to humiliate himself in front of Adam like that again. Or so he thinks. When Adam starts to sing and Chris picks up the harmony on his guitar, he can just feel the affection Adam has for Allison coming through his voice, weaving in with the magic, and Chris's own affection for Allison, for Adam, rises to the surface of his mind, and he just can't help it. He has to join in, has to braid those strands of feeling together until they're three times as strong. When the spell is over, Chris feels a little tired, like it took more out of him than just singing and playing would have. He tries to stand up from the stool and almost falls. Fortunately, Adam is quick enough to catch both Chris and his guitar. Yeah, it can hit you that way if you're not used to it, he says, guiding Chris out of the workroom and into the dining area with a hand under his elbow. He putters around the kitchenette and a couple of minutes later sets a mug of tea down on the table in front of Chris. Thanks, Chris says, sipping the tea gratefully. No problem. You know, this won't happen if you get properly trained, Adam says, arching an eyebrow. Chris rolls his eyes. Yeah, it also won't happen if I stop trying to sing along. Adam gives him an unreadable look. Did you mean to sing along this time? No, Chris admits, looking away. I just couldn't help it, Adam finishes, and Chris nods. You said you stopped singing when you were 16? Chris nods again. That makes 7 years of magic building in your voice and your heart, desperate to get out and do something, make something. You're not going to be able to keep it to yourself if you're in the presence of magic, Adam says, looking a little sad. It's just not an option. The magic wants to get out. So, it's you, Chris says, meeting Adam's eyes. Being around you. If I just went back home, I wouldn't be tempted and the magic would just box itself away again, forever. Is that really what you want? Adam asks. His eyes are bright, bright blue, piercing and unforgiving. Of course it is, Chris stammers, but the truth is that he's not sure anymore. And he's pretty sure Adam knows that. Chris misses Katie, misses his parents, misses his home and its familiar places. But if he went back now, he'd miss Adam in this misshapen little tower, and the way Adam's freckles show through his makeup at the end of a long day when he wipes a tired hand across his face. Uh-huh, Adam murmurs, noncommittal. Well, too bad, because I'm still getting paid pretty well to keep you here, so that's that. You might as well take advantage of it while you can. Chris is pretty sure that that's a dangerous way to start thinking about things, but the next day he reports to Adam's workroom, guitar in hand, and sits on the bench at the big center table with Adam, going over the beginner spells he barely remembers from his teenage years. Adam is really patient with him, seems to enjoy watching him rediscover the simple magics he used to know how to do. In return, Chris insists on teaching Adam to play the piano that's been gathering dust in the workroom. One day, a chime sounds in the middle of one of their piano lessons, and Adam swears. Hang on, he mutters. Messenger from the council coming through. We have to let him through the defenses. Chris joins him in singing a spell of safe passage, and a few seconds later, a man suddenly appears in Adam's workroom. Wizard Adam?
Ryan, Adam replies, nodding. He turns to Chris and explains, Ryan is an air spirit. Princess Katie of Eastern Arkansas is called a wizard's convocation. The council summons you to attend at sundown and to bring Prince Chris with you. You may prepare with any defensive magics you feel necessary. Good to know, Adam says, blank-faced, giving nothing away, and Ryan vanishes as quickly as he came. Shit, Adam says softly when he's gone. Is that... this is bad news? Chris asks, and Adam laughs shortly. For me, yeah. The council and I have gotten along really well for the past several years by each pretending that the other doesn't exist. Having me there on all of their faces is just going to remind them how much they can't stand me. I'm sorry. It's okay, Adam shrugs. I'm operating under a totally legit contract, so they probably just want to make sure that I'm not abusing you or anything while you're here. More softly, he says. I hate to say this, but full disclosure, if you want to go back to your family, that's probably the fastest way to do it. Tell them I'm doing experiments on you or tried to seduce you. That one they'll definitely believe, and they'll probably let you go back to Arkansas. And what happens to you then? Chris asks, a little angry that Adam would even think that Chris would do such a thing. They'll punish me, Adam says, casually, as if it doesn't matter. That's totally not going to happen, Chris says firmly. I'm not going to lie, especially if it would get you in trouble. I'm glad, Adam smiles. Well, we've got to be there by sundown. There's a lot to do and not a lot of time. Of course, 2 of the 5 hours before sundown are spent on Adam picking out the perfect outfit and putting together all the right jewelry and makeup. Chris, who is set in 5 minutes with his plaid shirt and jeans, rolls his eyes, but keeps his mouth shut as Adam explains the importance of each item of clothing and how it contributes to the overall fashion gestalt, which is a combination of words Chris never thought he'd hear in his lifetime. The other 3 are spent on last-minute protective magic. Apologizing the whole time, Adam uses one of his eyeliner pencils to draw a sigil on the skin of Chris's back, where his shirt covers it up, then sings it into the skin, where it leaves a warm, sort of tingly feeling. It keeps you from going more than 10 feet away from me. Sorry, precaution. I really hope it won't be necessary. Just as the sun is about to sink below the horizon, Adam wraps an arm around Chris's waist, says, "Close your eyes," and starts to sing. When Adam's voice quiets, Chris opens his eyes. He and Adam are in some kind of raised platform, surrounded on one side by rows and rows of chairs. He can see Katie and his parents sitting close to the front, and the wizard Danny not far away. Front and center, there are 4 people, 2 men and 2 women, sitting in one long row, staring up at Adam in a way that makes Chris feel defensive. "Those are the judges," Adam murmurs in Chris's ear. "They sometimes make some crappy decisions, but they're mostly fair. This could be a lot worse." Ryan, the air spirit messenger from earlier in the day, comes forward and says a lot of ritual stuff, talking to the judges and Adam. Adam produces the contract, and the judges look it over and nod. It all passes by in kind of a blur until suddenly one of the judges turns to Chris and says, "Well, Your Highness, this is the moment of truth. Do you have any complaints, any at all, about your treatment at the wizard Adam's hands?" "He kidnapped me," Chris points out, and the judges laugh. "Besides that," the younger female judge says, smiling, "as crazy as this may sound, he does have a legal contract for that." "No," Chris answers honestly. "Adam is great. We're really different, but we get along." "And he's never made any inappropriate..." One of the male judges starts to push, and Chris cuts him off rudely. "No," he says clearly, staring the guy down. "Adam wouldn't do that. Adam is a good guy. And if you knew him even a little, you wouldn't even have to ask. I think it's stupid that you feel like you can say that stuff just because Adam's different from you. You can't. It's wrong." He turns away from the judges and catches sight of Katie's face. She's smiling at him, and she looks proud. He smiles back. It's hard to be angry when he sees her face. She stands up and addresses the judges. "That's all I needed to hear. Obviously, I want to have my fiancé back home as soon as possible, but as long as he's being well treated, I can respect the wizard Adam's right to fulfill his contract." She turns to give the wizard Danny a dirty look. "Also, please let me suggest that you maybe do something about the wizards who've been spreading all kinds of cruel, false rumors in my kingdom. It's really starting to get on my nerves." Chris grins. The wizard Danny does not look amused. He stands up, looks down his nose at Katie, and says, "I am in possession of some facts that the council should know. Isn't it true, Prince Chris, that when you were younger you wanted to be a wizard?" Chris feels like he's been punched, but he tries not to show it. "That was a long time ago," he says, and he knows it's as good as a yes.
And isn't it true, honorable judges, that you can feel a magic signature coming from Prince Chris?
That's just a spell to keep us from being separated, Adam tries to explain, but the wizard Danny barrels right over him.
I have evidence to suggest that the wizard Adam has been teaching Prince Chris some small magics, playing on his childhood dreams in return for who knows what sordid repayment, and simultaneously breaking the council's ban forbidding him from taking an apprentice, Danny announces, and Chris feels sick to his stomach, because that's not how it is at all, but now even Katie looks doubtful.
You're full of crap, Chris says, and Adam reaches out to touch his arm, muttering, Chris, no. Chris is in no mood to keep quiet. He yanks up the back of his shirt to show them the sigil. This is where the magic is coming from, okay? Just a spell to keep us from being separated, like Adam said, he explains, angry that he even has to.
And there's no sordid repayment, okay? Adam has never asked me to do anything for him. He won't even let me do the chores, Chris adds in an aggrieved tone, and Adam looks like he can't decide whether to laugh or cry.
He could ask, Chris says more softly. He's done a lot of nice things for me, and I'm really grateful, and I like him, and we're friends, and he's obviously, you know.
Chris waves a hand at Adam that encompasses Adam's bright blue eyes, and his infectious smile, and his strong hands, and his strangely magnetic experimental hair.
So, you know, he could, Chris admits, blushing a little. But he wouldn't. He'd never.
There's an outburst of muttering from the spectators, and the judges turn to confer with one another. Adam gives him a smile that's equal parts pleased and rueful.
As much as I appreciate the sentiment, he murmurs, bending to speak directly into Chris's ear. Showing them the spell I sang into your naked skin and then telling them that you think I might very well be entitled to sexual favors from you was probably not the best way to clear my name.
Chris winces, feeling guilty, but Adam's still smiling, so it must not be too bad.
Your Highness, the younger female judge says, we take your point as far as your personal relationship with the wizard Adam, but is it true that he has been teaching you magic?
Chris hates to lie, and he's bad at it, and it just seems wrong, but he doesn't want to get Adam in trouble.
Not really teaching, he hedges. Just reminded me of stuff I already knew, mostly.
Yes, I've been teaching him, Adam says bluntly, cutting Chris off. I didn't think it was an issue, since he's a prince, and so he can't formally be my apprentice. He's got a lot of talent. I didn't want it running wild.
That's not your judgment to make, the male judge with the British accent says, sneering. Chris thinks, douchebag.
It's my fault, Chris says, which is not strictly true, but which is definitely better than letting Adam get in trouble for doing him a favor.
I just kept doing magic in front of him without meaning to. I could have hurt someone, I guess, Chris adds, which may be laying it on a little thick, but the judges seem to like that.
They mutter and confer, and Chris takes a moment to look for Katie. When he sees her, he smiles, but she's giving him kind of a weird look.
Prince Chris, Wizard Adam, the non-douchebag male judge says. Our verdict is this. Wizard Adam may escape punishment for now. But, Prince Chris, we will be placing a tracking charm on you, and if we ever detect you performing magic again, under Wizard Adam's supervision or not, you will both be blacklisted by the council, banned from council lands, forbidden the use of council property, and no longer protected by council justice. So be it.
No, wait, Adam protests. That's not fair.
But everybody in the audience is leaving and no one is paying attention.
It's okay, Chris says, putting a hand on his shoulder. I shouldn't have started doing magic again in the first place. I don't want you to worry. I won't put you in danger by trying magic again.
You think I'm worried about me? Adam whispers, incredulous.
Chris, your magic is a part of who you are. You can't smother it, lock it away.
Adam is interrupted by the arrival of Katie and a pair of unfamiliar-looking knights.
Chris, can I speak to you alone for a minute? Katie asks, and Chris agrees.
After she's pulled him a few feet away from Adam, who is chatting with the knights, she looks him straight in the eye and says,
On the one hand, I'm relieved to hear that Wizard Adam isn't importuning you for sexual favors.
She shrugs.
On the other hand, I'm kind of disappointed that the Wizard Adam isn't importuning you for sexual favors.
Chris's eyes pop out, and he opens and closes his mouth without saying anything, like a fish. Katie rolls her eyes.
Well, you want him to, don't you?
Chris makes an inarticulate vowel sound, and Katie gently pats him on the shoulder.
Don't worry, it's not actually obvious, just obvious to me. I've known you a long time, Chris, she says, with a smile that's a little sad.
Marg, Chris says, which is not really an improvement.
I've been spending a lot of time in negotiations with the King of Missouri trying to get you back, she tells him, raising an eyebrow. Should I not have bothered?
Chris is torn, but in the end, he knows what his answer has to be. "I have responsibilities," he says heavily. "To you, to my people, to the kingdom. No matter how much I have responsibilities," he concludes.
"Hmm," says Katie, with the faraway look in her eyes that means she's planning something.
You go back with your wizard. I'll let you know."
With that vague pronouncement, she wraps her arms around him in a tight hug.
"I love you," she tells him, "and I want you to be happy. I'm proud of you."
"I love you too," Chris whispers, and remembers how lucky he is to have a girl like her on his side. Chris and Adam return to the tower after Wizard Kara and the Council place the tracking spell on Chris. Things aren't really the same. Chris tries, and he can tell Adam's trying too, but it's awkward to go back to the time when their friendship stopped at the workroom door. Adam doesn't even show him pictures of home anymore, because they're both afraid that Chris won't be able to stop himself from singing along. Worse, Chris can't see Allison anymore. She and Adam are both afraid that being around a spirit like her would leave a trace of magic on Chris. Useless once again, Chris mopes around the tower. Once, in a fit of desperate boredom, he washes the dishes himself, by hand. It doesn't make him feel any better. The stupid thing is, Chris spent 7 years of his life voluntarily not doing magic, and while he'd missed it at first and thought about it occasionally, for the most part he hadn't given it any thought for those 7 long years. But now that he can't do magic, it's all he can think about. The muffled sound of Adam's clear voice through the workroom door drives Chris into the bedroom to pull the covers over his head. His guitar is packed away and buried under a messy pile of Adam's mini leather pants. Every time Chris's clothes magically appear on top of his dresser overnight, full of the rich citrus smell that Allison's fire magic leaves behind, it takes Chris an hour to dig himself out of his totally unhelpful mud wallow of self-pity. Chris still likes being around Adam, still wants things from Adam that he hardly knows how to explain, still blushes when Adam blithely strips in the bedroom on his way to a shower. But if he can't be helpful, if he can't be a part of the most important thing in Adam's life...
"Oh my God, are you brooding?"
Adam says, bending over to peer into Chris's face.
"Maybe," says Chris, slightly shamefaced.
"Well, stop it, it's disturbing," says Adam, making a face. "It's like watching a kitten cry or watching a daisy beat up another daisy. I don't know. It's just wrong."
"I miss magic," Chris blurts out stupidly.
"I know," Adam says gently. He folds Chris into a warm hug. Adam gives great hugs and rests his chin on top of Chris's head. "I'm going to fix this for you. This is my fault and I'm going to make it right." Chris detaches to frown up at Adam.
"It's not your fault, Adam."
"Whatever you say, Pocket Prince," Adam says, dismissing him with a wave of his hand. "Hey, I'm giving Allison a vacation for a few days, so we'll have to cook and clean and do the dishes ourselves. Try to restrain your disappointment," Adam concludes dryly as Chris cheers. Adam has some big magic thing he's working on, so Chris ends up doing most of the chores, but he absolutely could not mind less. He finally feels useful again, drying stacks of plates and sweeping the floor, and Chris thinks maybe things will go back to the way they used to be, now that he actually has something to do. Although, there being no laundry room, Chris is really hoping Allison comes back before he runs out of underwear. A few nights later, after Chris and Adam are cleaning up after a dinner that Chris proudly cooked, Chris notices that Adam is a little off somehow. He's moving like his joints hurt, and there's something sad looking around the edges of his eyes. Chris nudges him gently in the ribs.
"Your sparkle seems a little desparkled. Do you want to talk about it?"
"No, that's okay," Adam dredges up a smile.
"And by the way, my sparkle is desparkled? What the hell is that?"
Chris refuses to blush.
"Your sparkle is an integral part of the whole Wizard Adam experience," he insists, waving a hand at Adam vaguely, and Adam cracks up, laughing so hard he actually has to lean on the counter for support.
Tears are coming out of his eyes, and he's practically wheezing as Chris punches him in the shoulder.
"Shut up, it wasn't that funny."
"Oh, this is too good," Adam says, grinning, his voice still shaking.
"Tell me more about the Wizard Adam experience."
Chris wants to scowl, but he's just glad that Adam's smiling again. Adam's leaning gracefully against the counter, still breathing hard. His face is flushed and his chest is heaving slightly. And Chris is suddenly a little afraid he'll say the wrong thing, so all he says is, It's a nice experience." The smile Adam gives him in return is small and gentle.
"Thanks," he says.
"Adam's smile twists slightly and he looks away.
I'll miss you when you go back.
Chris is about to say, you too, but Adam turns into a whirling dervish of efficiency, finishing up the dishes in no time and hustling Chris into bed.
What about you? Chris asks.
He likes the slow, quiet conversations they have at night, trading words between their separate beds as they drift off.
I'll be along in a little bit. There's something I have to do first.
Okay, Chris says, yawning. He's woken up the next morning by a hand shaking his shoulder roughly. It's barely light out, and Chris opens his eyes blearily to see Adam standing over the bed, still shaking him urgently.
Come on, get up. We have to go before sunrise is over, Adam says, practically dragging Chris out of bed.
Are you kidnapping me again? Chris asks fuzzily, and Adam groans and asks, will you ever let that go?
Before opening his mouth and singing a hurried string of runs that transports the two of them to a grassy place Chris has never seen before.
What? Chris starts to ask, but Adam sings himself away again before Chris can finish the question.
In Adam's absence, Chris looks around. He's in a forest, surrounded by... stuff. Adam's stuff, by the look of it. Chris can see the silvery scrying bowl and even the grand piano from the workroom. Adam reappears, holding a giant bundle that appears to be all of Chris's stuff, which he sets down gently on the grass next to the piano.
I'm about to do some incredibly complicated magic, so I really, really need you to not interrupt me, he says to Chris, eyes intense. And obviously you can't help me. I'm sorry, everything will be better soon, he finishes cryptically, before facing away from Chris and starting to sing.
His eyes drift closed, and his hands rise toward the sliver of sun that's starting to appear on the horizon. His voice, as always, is stunning, and Chris is just so glad to be back in the presence of Adam's magic that it takes him a few minutes to notice one more important thing about where they are, the great big flipping stone tower just 10 yards or so away. It's got to be Adam's tower, Chris thinks, because as wizards' towers go, it's pretty tiny and none of the stones match, and honestly, Chris has no idea how the darn thing stays standing, because it doesn't have any of the buttresses it's supposed to have and doesn't seem to have a sunk foundation at all. Which makes Chris feel a little queasy about the structure he's apparently been living in for the past several months. Distracted by the tower, Chris doesn't notice when Adam pulls the knife from his boot without pausing in his spell, but he definitely notices when he draws the knife across his left palm. Adam's voice catches, and Chris has to focus really hard on Adam's command not to interfere, because he doesn't like the turn this is taking at all. When the first drop of blood hits the ground, the tower starts to chime, to harmonize with Adam's voice. Adam claps his hands together, and the tower echoes the sound with a boom of its own, and suddenly the whole structure starts to disintegrate, for lack of a better word. In a careful, controlled manner, the whole tower starts to slowly implode on itself, crumbling inward, stone by stone, until at last there's a pile of rubble where the tower used to stand, and Adam suddenly sags to the ground, barely holding himself up at the knees. Chris rushes to help him, but Adam holds up a hand, looking desperately toward the horizon, where the last of the sun is about to emerge.
I have to do it now, he says urgently. Before the sun is up, give me your hand.
Chris does, and Adam closes his eyes and starts to sing again, steadily but with increasing feeling. When Chris looks down at where their hands are joined, he can see a tracery of lines, like words and symbols, starting to appear on his hand and spreading slowly up his arm. Then traveling across his collarbone and down his other arm, and, Chris guesses, his chest. He awkwardly tries to remove his shirt one-handed, and sure enough, the intricate lines trace down his chest, stopping just below his heart. In a way, they're beautiful, but they're a little creepy, too. Chris doesn't like them. Adam's eyes fly open, and he, too, looks at the patterns on Chris's skin. His spell falters only for a moment as he says to Chris, I'm so sorry about this. Please forgive me. And then takes up the spell again. With the first two fingers of his left hand, Adam draws an invisible line down Chris's right arm, following the path of his radius. Where his fingers touch, it's like an eraser or a washcloth. The black filigree disappears. With the same two fingers, Adam strokes down Chris's neck and along his shoulder, continuing on down the outside of Chris's left arm, all the way down to his thumb, and everywhere Adam's fingers travel, they wipe away the intricate designs. Chris gasps as Adam's fingers circle his palm, skate along the inside of his elbow, brush softly under his eyes. Gently, gradually, Adam's hand washes Chris clean of the tracery of lines, inch by inch, as Chris looks on wide-eyed and breathing fast. Finally, as far as Chris can tell without a mirror, all of his skin is back to normal, except for his lips and the spot directly over his heart. Adam steps close, close enough that Chris can hear his quick gasped breaths and draws his thumb slowly over Chris's lips, which can't help but part. Finally, Adam uncurls his fingers and places his left palm, still bleeding a little, directly over Chris's heart as the sun breaks away from the horizon. Adam stops singing. Chris takes a deep breath and then another, and Adam quickly steps away.
"What was that?" Chris asks.
"And your tower?"
"That, I took the Wizard Council's tracking spell off of you," Adam replies with a shadow of a smile.
"You can do as much magic as you want now, whenever you want."
"You..." Chris doesn't know how to respond to that.
"Aren't they going to notice?"
Adam shrugs.
"Eventually they will. I did the removal the hard but clean way, so breaking the spell itself won't have sent up any alarms. But in a few months or a few years, they'll remember to check up on you and they'll notice it's gone."
"And when they do?" Chris asks.
"What then? What'll happen to you?"
"They'll exile me, excommunicate me, whatever they feel like. Maybe worse."
Adam rolls his eyes.
"Let them try. I know they're all scared of me anyway. After the power I showed today, they'll be fucking terrified."
"And that's another thing. Where did you get enough power to break a spell sung by the entire Council of Wizards, Adam?" Chris asks, almost sure he doesn't want to know the answer.
"The tower," Adam replies, and the look he shoots the pile of rubble where the tower used to stand is wistful. "I just stripped the power from the stones. All the power I put into building it, and to maintaining it and defending it, and even the power in the stones themselves, I just took it back in myself, so that I'd have enough to fuel the spell."
"Allison hasn't been on vacation, has she?" Chris asks, pretty darn mad by now. "You couldn't spare any power to feed her, so you released her as your familiar. She's gone."
Adam flinches.
"Hopefully I can find her again in a couple months, when I have my strength back. She understood. She's the one who told me to do it."
"And where are you going to live now? Did you think of that?" Chris throws up his hands.
"I'll figure something out," Adam says, determined.
"You can use your money from your contract with the King of Missouri," Chris says, thinking fast, but Adam interrupts him.
"I can't do that, actually, because I'm breaking the contract."
"What?"
Adam looks at him fondly with a hint of sadness and says, "You're free to go, Chris. If I had the power, I'd take you back to Arkansas right now. You should be free to live your life."
His shoulders sag.
"I was a hypocrite to be so mad at the council for stopping you from doing what you wanted to when I was doing the same thing. So..."
He gives Chris a really good imitation of a smile.
"Go and do princely things. Marry the princess, rule the kingdom, all that fun stuff."
"No," Chris says. Adam looks thrown.
"No?
No."
"What do you mean, no?" Adam asks, looking suspicious and a little bit mad.
"I mean, no, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to marry Katie. I'm going to stay with you."
Adam runs his hands through his hair.
"Chris, you don't owe me anything. I know right now it looks like I've done this big thing for you, and I remember all that stuff you said at the convocation about how you thought I could, but that's not..."
He takes a deep breath and sighs.
"I did it for myself, because I want you to be happy. It was totally selfish on my part, I assure you."
"Because you love me," Chris says, suddenly wonderfully sure, and Adam's jaw falls open.
"That's not... I didn't..."
He flails, but Chris just walks up to him and rests a hand softly on his cheek and says, "It's okay. I love you too."
"Really?" Adam asks. "I mean, what?
Wait." Chris tearfully interrupts him.
"I don't have a tower to dismantle to prove how I feel about you, or a familiar to say goodbye to, or a spell to break. Totally subtle, by the way," he comments, enjoying himself when Adam goggles. "But I do love you. I have for a long time, so I'm not going to leave you."
"Chris, you don't need to..." Adam starts, looking like he's gearing up for an argument, and Chris just sighs.
"Okay, maybe I do need the grand romantic gesture. Hang on."
Chris digs his guitar out of the pile of his belongings, focuses on a spot just about halfway between the grand piano and the ruins of the tower. Opening his mouth, he starts to sing. He sings about how much he misses Allison and misses the rickety little tower, sings all the things he would miss about Adam if he went away. His freckles and his surprisingly smooth laugh, his rich, clear voice and his broad, graceful hands, his unbending courage and his warm heart. He sings with his own strength of purpose, sings his own refusal to let go now that he's finally found what he really wants. And when he's done, there's a very serviceable little one-story cottage sitting where there used to be just grass. When Chris turns to look at Adam, Adam is staring back, speechless. It's, kind of plain, I know, Chris says. I'm not good at, you know, sparkle. That's not really my thing. But, that's not the point, because it's not a house. Well, it is a house, but it's sort of more a point, and the point is this. Arkansas isn't my home. This, Chris gestures to the little cabin. This is my home, because this is where you are. Still silent, Adam walks up to the cabin and opens the door, stepping inside. Chris follows him into the small entryway that leads into the rest of the house. Adam looks down at Chris. Chris looks back at Adam.
You are absolutely out of your mind, you know that? Adam says, breaking into a wide grin and pulling Chris into a very lengthy and passionate kiss.
Just as Chris is threading his hand into Adam's soft black hair, the door of the cottage bursts inward with a bang and three figures come charging in. The person in front is Katie, whom Chris blushes as she gets a good look at Chris and Adam's arms still tangled around each other.
Hi, she says, clearly having a pretty hard time trying not to laugh. We're here to, rescue you. I'm getting the impression that might not be necessary, though.
She sighs.
Oh, well, it was mostly a formality anyway.
Katie, Chris says, taking a step toward her, because he's had this idea just a few minutes earlier and he's got to get it out before someone tries to stop him, to take him back to the life he's decided he doesn't want. Katie, I'm abdicating my throne. When my parents resign the rule of Western Arkansas and the throne passes to me, I'm passing it on to you. You're a great ruler and you'll make a great queen. I know I can trust you with anything. Adam makes an inarticulate noise of protest, but Katie considers this for a minute, then breaks into a relieved smile.
Oh, Chris, that just makes things so much simpler. I assume you're not marrying me then?
That's right, Chris says, trying to be gentle. I'm sorry.
Great! Katie beams. Then all our problems are solved. I was going to rescue you because David, that's the king of Missouri, was being super ornery and wouldn't release the Wizard Adam's contract. But now that I'm free to marry him instead... King David, obviously, not Adam. No offense, Adam. You won't be a threat to his kingdom anymore, and the Wizard Adam can release you without reneging on his contract.
Wait, you're marrying the King of Missouri? Chris asks, feeling like he's been left a little bit in the dust by the past 30 seconds. Katie nods.
I told you I've been spending nearly every day in negotiations with him for your release, and, well...
She shrugs, looking a little dreamy.
We just got to talking. Granted, mostly we were talking about you, but this is what's right for me and for the kingdom.
I'm glad, Chris says sincerely. You deserve to have somebody special.
Thanks, Chris, she says and hugs him.
When she lets him go, she gives him a speculative look.
You know, since you deprived me of a fiancé, I feel like you owe me.
Anything, Chris promises.
How about a court wizard?
She says, eyes sparkling. I'm not licensed by the council, Chris says, just as Adam says. The council hates my guts. And Katie waves her hands to cut them off, looking totally unconcerned.
One of the things King David and I talked about is how hidebound and stupid the council has become. We decided to start our own council of wizards, which would be open to everyone and which wouldn't punish people for being different. We don't really have the time or patience to run it ourselves, though, Katie says to Adam. Want the job?
Adam looks just as confused and overwhelmed as Chris does.
What? Wonderful, Katie says, smiling as wide as ever. Well, I'm going back to Arkansas to set this all up. I'll expect my court wizard and my wizard counselor to get there pretty soon, but I understand you're having a sort of honeymoon type of thing, so just come when you can.
And she and her two knights march right out of the cottage, having rearranged Chris's whole life in the space of about 5 minutes. We don't have to do any of that, you know, Chris says quietly. If you want to just stay here and keep doing the contract work you've been doing, I meant it when I said that home, for me, is wherever you are.
Oh, shut up, Pocket Prince, Adam laughs. You know this is awesome beyond my wildest dreams, right? And by the way, your ex-fiancé is totally terrifying and awesome.
I was a lucky guy, Chris agrees. He leans close and kisses Adam gently. I'm luckier now. Suddenly, there's a knock on the cottage door. When Chris opens it, one of Katie's knights is standing in the doorway looking amused.
We found this fire spirit moping around the woods about a half mile from here. She says she belongs with you guys.
Allison, Adam exclaims, pulling the red-haired girl in through the door and into an enthusiastic hug.
You're smushing me,
Allison cries as Chris quietly thanks the knight and closes the door again.
So many fabulous things have happened in your absence, Adam explains.
Chris is going to be court wizard, and I'm going to be some kind of grand poobah on a new wizard's council, and...
Allison rolls her eyes.
Oh, whatever. The important question is, did you guys confess your eternal love and stare deeply into each other's eyes before sharing a soul-shattering kiss?
Oh, wow, says Chris.
Yes, says Adam.
Yay,
says Allison. And we're going to be doing a lot more of that and maybe other exciting, possibly naked things starting right now, so it's time for all good little fire spirits to give the humans some alone time, Adam says firmly as Allison pouts. She kisses each of them on the cheek before vanishing in a puff of sparks. Adam pushes Chris gently against the wall and kisses him deeply. Chris can feel Adam's smile against his skin as Adam murmurs, "Kidnapping you is the best thing I ever did."
"So you admit you kidnapped me," Chris crows, triumphant, and Adam pulls back to give him a dirty look.
"Still can't let that go, huh?"
"I don't understand why you couldn't just ask me out like a sane person," Chris mutters into the curve of Adam's jaw.
"Well, I didn't know I wanted to back then, did I?"
Adam says, being entirely too reasonable for Chris's taste. Chris scowls up at him in reply.
"Too cute for words," Adam says, laughing, which makes Chris blush.
Adam soothes him with a kiss.
"Tell you what, baby, if it'll make you feel better, you can kidnap me right back."
So Chris did, and they lived happily ever after. The end.